Hello and welcome to the Reformers Podcast for Monday the 2nd of October. It's a brand new month. And joining me on this edition, Assistant Editor Steve Withers.
More human than human is our motto.
News Editor Mark Hodgkinson.
You know the score, pal.
And special guest star Mark Botwright.
There's some of me in you.
Good one.
Yeah, trust Mr. Botwright to get the best ones. Right, so I guess we need to wish Ed all the best. He's not here at the minute. He's about to go under the knife to have a couple of screws taken out of his leg, and hopefully he'll be able to start learning to walk again, because it's getting closer and closer towards CES, and he could end up on an obese cycle. Is it obese cycle? How do you say it?
Obese cycle. That's it.
Obese cycle sounds right.
Obese cycle. No, that sounds better.
That sounds like a kind of icicle with a fat person stuck to it or something.
I don't know what to say to that.
Carry on.
I believe you're waiting on something, Mr. Botwright.
No, one of them's been delivered.
All right. And what was that?
That was one of the SNES minis.
Ooh.
One of them. So you've ordered
more than one.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a scalper or a collector, but I kind of screwed up with the pre-ordering process. And I got an email through saying, you know, your account has been charged. And I suddenly thought, fraud? No, terrible. And then I suddenly realized that I'd screwed up and accidentally ordered two.
Well, I'll have one off you if you like, if you're selling it.
Oh, I might do it at cost. Yeah.
Yeah. But which cost?
Yeah.
And I guess I just need to remind everybody that the podcast is not around for the next couple of weeks. We will be taking our autumn break. Well, I will. I'll be on holiday for 2 weeks. So the podcast won't be here. We will be back again on the 23rd of October, which seems like a hell of a long way away. But we'll be when the podcast comes back. So you're listening to this on the 2nd October. We're not back for another 21 days, people. So you're just going to have to manage on without us. How are you going to cope?
I think I'll probably be okay.
Muddle on through.
Insert tumbleweed here.
Right, current competitions. Mr. Botwright, tell us what we can win.
You can win a copy of Lethal Weapons Season 1 on Blu-ray, and that one runs to the 9th of October, and a Focal Sib Evo 5.1.2 Dolby Atmos speaker package, worth £1,099, courtesy of Seven Oaks Sound Vision, and that one closes on the 1st of November.
Any previous competition winners, Mark?
None.
Oh, he keeps winning this, man. Anyway, let's move on to hardware news, and Mark's going to tell us all about Amazon's new launch of first their HDR Fire TVs.
Yeah, not very long after the Apple TV has been released. Hey presto, Amazon are on the case with their new HDR 4K Fire TV. It's basically like the last one, but smaller. I think it's got a different Amlogic chipset inside, but it's functionality-wise, it's identical. Sorry, just dropped some money. It costs $69.99, and that's the big message that Amazon were pushing, really. They were saying it's an affordable 4K HDR streamer, which is probably, almost certainly aimed at Apple and Nvidia.
Okay, well, let's do the comparison then. So the Apple is, how much did you pay for your Apple TV, Steve? Because Steve actually went and bought one.
£179.
Right, okay. So, and this is £69.99 for the Fire TV HDR. So the only thing looking at it that I can see that's different is no Dolby Vision. Is that right,
and obviously
Mark?
You can't access it.
On the face of it, I mean, Steve's got the Apple TV, but on the face of it, that is the major difference, yeah.
So
obviously no iTunes.
But, no iTunes and no Dolby Vision for 100 and what extra?
£110. It does seem like a big premium.
Yeah, so I mean, Apple TV, it's always been in the past, Steve, very US-centric. Has that changed?
No, unfortunately it hasn't. It remains extremely US-centric. If you're a UK user, you've basically got Netflix, Now TV, BBC iPlayer, YouTube.
Okay, so there's no Amazon at the minute then?
No, but that is coming, in fairness, that is coming, but it isn't there just yet.
Compared to the Fire TV, so what's on the Fire TV, Mark?
It's got Alexa. That's one of its major selling points. It's got an Alexa enabled room.
I'm not sure.
Oh, shit. This is going to be tricky.
I better be careful with that too, because there's one sitting right
it's
behind
me. It's got that voice assistant. It will remain nameless for this portion. I'm going to turn her off in a second. And a lot of integration with smart home stuff from the likes of Ring and Nest and Logitech, and it generally Zigbee enabled protocol devices, and yeah, it's got a lot of smart home coming stuff coming in general that Apple TV can't really boast. I think that one is better than Siri from in terms of,
yeah, I agree,
media control.
Yeah. Okay. So there's that. But in terms of the apps as well that are available.
In terms of the apps, it's got loads. Yeah, it's got iPlayer, ITV Hub, Amazon Video, Netflix, All4, My4, My5, BBC News, BBC Sport, Eurosport Player, Discovery. It's got tons. It's got thousands.
It's got Now TV.
10,000 apps. It's got.
Mark, has it got Now TV?
That's the one that will be missing for you. Yeah. No, it hasn't. And never will, as far as I'm.
Has it got built-in has it got any memory attached to it?
It's got 8 gig of storage, is it? 2 gig of RAM. I mean, you don't need a lot of storage. You don't download movies on Amazon system.
You can't download 4K on iTunes either.
No, you can't download 4K anywhere.
Yeah. So this £110 difference is it's not a great deal of difference there, really, is it? And I think just to have Now TV and iTunes and Dolby Vision, I think you've overpaid, Steve.
Yeah, well, that's no change there then when it comes to Apple Kit. It is expensive. There's no question about it. It's got enormous potential in it, and I think it's a nice piece of kit. But Apple's pricing, I mean, they used to be £99, didn't they? And that always seemed like a really nice price point. £179 or £199 if you're going for the 64 gig version is toppy compared to the. I mean, I know it's been obviously been priced to compete with the Nvidia Shield. But yeah, it is expensive. There's no question about it for what you get, particularly in this country. I think maybe in the US it makes more sense. In the US, there's a lot more you can do with it. But in this country, unless you really need access to iTunes or you desperately want Dolby Vision, right now, I can't see much reason to buy it over the competition.
What is the big selling point for the US then? Just kind of tying all different services together or something?
There's more apps. It's got TV app, which ties everything together, which hasn't been launched in this country yet. It's got various features for enhanced viewing of sporting content. Again, it's tied in with various US streamer services. It's more of a complete package in the US. It always has been. In this country, there's always been minimal apps that are specifically aimed at the UK. And the ones that are there aren't necessarily that good. To be honest, the Now TV app is long overdue an update. The iPlayer app isn't as good. Sorry.
With these boxes, can you do, say, just a search for a particular program and it'll search all of the kind of catch-up services, all the apps?
You can ask Siri to do that. Sorry, yeah. Sorry, go on, Mark.
Yeah, you can definitely now on the Nvidia Shield. It's an update as of yesterday at the times of recording. You can do that through Netflix, Google, and Amazon at least.
Yeah, and obviously,
and YouTube.
And the Fire TV is going to have that as well with Alexa. Yeah. Now, you see, I can say Alexa because I don't have one in here. I'm thinking.
Don't say too loud, though. It might come through my headphones.
I'm thinking about buying one, but I haven't got
Shout.
One yet.
Alexa, Pornhub.
Not again.
Right, so Steve, once you're waking up a little bit and you sound a bit more enthusiastic, so the Apple TV 4K, buyer's regret or what?
No, I don't have buyer's regret because before I only had an Apple TV 3, which is, what's that, about 4 or 5 years old now? So it's an upgrade anyway for me. And like I said earlier, it has got some great potential. It's got some big problems, though, as well. The real big problem with the Apple TV is that it detects the capabilities of your TV or your display, and then it sets itself up to give you the maximum experience, which in theory sounds great, except that it does it in the same format all the time. So if your TV supports Dolby Vision, it will output 4K Dolby Vision all the time, regardless of how the content was actually originally created.
Yeah, so it won't be Dolby Vision, it'll be falling down to the HDR10 layer, but it will have HDR turned on, so it's overcooking the colours, yeah?
Well, no, it's technically outputting Dolby Vision. The TV, like, for example, if you connect it to an LG OLED, it goes into Dolby Vision mode all the time.
Yeah, but
now,
that's,
what exactly
but
it's just not actually Dolby Vision in the sense of metadata, no. Clearly, it's just creating a metadata tag that says this is Dolby Vision content, although it's not actually Dolby Vision content. But what it basically means is with HDR10 content, Phil, it's outputting that HDR10 base layer. And with SDR content, it is basically expanding the color gamut and increasing the dynamic range and therefore making everything look oversaturated and overblown in terms of highlights. So you know, what it should be doing is it should be outputting the content as it was actually created. So if it's Dolby Vision, obviously it outputs Dolby Vision. If it's HDR10, it outputs HDR10. And if it's SDR, it outputs SDR.
Well,
I don't
see,
have an issue of...
It's only getting one lot of metadata though, Steve. So when you go back to SDR material, it's not getting metadata to say I'm SDR. It will be getting metadata to say that it's HDR, and it'll switch that on, and then it won't switch it off again because it's not being told that it's no longer needed. That's what the issue will be. And I would imagine a firmware update should be able to solve that. So when it's not being sent metadata, it reverts to SDR.
That's what it should be doing.
So I've seen it on an Android box where if you play HDR content, a clip, it'll go into HDR mode and then will not come out again. It did exactly that. It took a firmware update to get rid of that.
Samsung's first lot of HDR TVs did exactly the same thing, didn't they, Steve?
What, stay in it? Yes, they did. You're right. Now, it's possible that this is a mistake. If it's a mistake, it seems like a gigantic mistake from such a massive product launch. Or worse than that, Apple thought this was a good idea and think they're doing you a favor. You know, they need to change it. I mean, obviously, I don't have an issue with them upscaling 1080p content to 4K. It's got to be done at some point, either by the TV or by the device. That's fine. It's just with the SDR, HDR aspects that they need to address. Otherwise, though, I mean, it does deliver a fantastic picture, and when it's set up correctly, it doesn't automatically change the refresh rate. I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. I was talking about this with Mark yesterday, and if they were going to do it, they would have done it by now. They've had ample opportunity to do that. So auto refresh rate doesn't seem very likely. You have to either select one that's going to be appropriate or manually change it if necessary. But that's quite common on a lot of boxes, isn't it, Mark?
Yeah, it's for the streaming apps, for sure. There's virtually none apart from Samsung Blu-ray players that actually do it.
So it'll just do 30.
And Sony.
Sorry. So it'll do 30-60 or 3:2 pull down. Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
But there is a 24 hertz mode.
There's a 24 hertz option as well.
In both HDR and SDR.
24, 25, 30, 50, 60. So it's entirely up to you. So you can tailor it to suit your needs, which is great. You've already alluded to the fact it doesn't currently have Amazon, but that is coming. Also, Dolby Atmos is coming. Doesn't do it yet, but there's absolutely no reason why it wouldn't be able to do it because it supports Dolby Digital Plus 7.1. So it's just a question of Apple getting their finger out and sorting it out. The one big factor, I think, for a lot of people, and this is something that Mark mentioned to me again when we were talking yesterday, it does not support VP9. So there's no 4K or HDR on YouTube. Which obviously is probably the biggest single source of 4K and HDR content. But that applies to all iOS devices. So it's something across all of Apple's products. And I don't think that's going to change anytime soon.
So you won't be able to watch my Canadian 4K video then?
No.
Well, what a shame.
Uh-huh. Or the new one, whatever you called it, Moist something.
We don't talk about that one on there.
What did you call it?
Mildly Moist Scotland.
Mildly Moist, yes. So, yeah, I mean, you're right, Phil. Going back to the original question about the price, yeah, it's overpriced. But I don't regret buying it. I like the product. What's interesting, I suppose, for the company that's coming out of this best, the company is really getting the most exposure, must be loving this, is Dolby. Because Dolby Vision has gone from being a relatively niche product that most people probably didn't even know about to now being, you know, very well recognized and obviously being used for a lot of content now on iTunes. And where Apple have definitely played a blinder is in terms of offering 4K HDR content with Dolby Vision over iTunes at quite nice prices, very attractive pricing, and also offering free upgrades to stuff you've already bought on iTunes if it's available in 4K and HDR or Dolby Vision, depending on what it is.
Yeah, did you say that Amazon have reacted to that pricing-wise?
I read earlier in the week that Amazon have reacted to the pricing. I think this might be in the States specifically right now, where obviously there's a lot more choice on iTunes in the States than there currently is in the UK. Another UK-US divide. Universal, Lionsgate and Sony currently aren't doing 4K HDR stuff on iTunes UK, but are in the US. I'm assuming it will come to the UK as well at some point. Disney currently aren't doing it on either platform, US or UK. Again, I'm assuming that will come at some point when they've sorted out some sort of agreement with Apple. But yeah, I think Amazon and the US have reacted in terms of their pricing because of what Apple have been doing with iTunes.
It is kind of interesting how Dolby Vision has very quickly become almost like the stamp of something that's technologically up to date, though, for something that could have been very niche.
It's funny. It's really weird watching, you know, coming back from Ether, we had these meetings of 20th Century Fox and Panasonic and Samsung, and they were pushing HDR 10+. My overriding thought was, you're talking about something that isn't available yet, isn't coming till next year, isn't currently part of the Ultra HD Blu-ray specs and has to be added. Whereas I've already got Dolby Vision on two players at home. I've got about 10 discs so far. It's supported by Netflix. It's supported by Amazon in the US. And now, obviously, with the launch of the Apple TV, suddenly iTunes and Apple devices are supporting it. You're thinking, well, it's here. It's widespread. It's freely available. Well, freely to consumers it is, at least. On a number of different television manufacturers are using it now as well. You've got to think, well, they've got a huge head start on HDR 10 Plus, which is still just really vaporware at the moment.
Yeah. I think the biggest story to come out of this whole thing is, you know, the iTunes pricing, because that has really pushed the rest of the market to do stuff and to change their price and models and all the rest of it. And I think kudos has to be given to Apple for pushing that. You know, the prices of 4K content has suddenly dropped when it comes to streaming on different services. And last night, even on Netflix, I was having a bit flick through and I noticed that movies are starting to now appear in 4K HDR as well for free on Netflix, and that's never been the case up until now. So I noticed a couple of movies, including Groundhog Day, that old classic, available in 4K Ultra HD. So that was interesting.
Isn't iTunes also doing like a upgrading if you've bought it as a 1080p?
Yeah.
If you already own it on 1080p and it's available in 4K or Dolby Vision HDR, then it will automatically upgrade it for you. Which I've got to say, that, I mean, it's typical Apple. They often do this, don't they? The hardware is expensive, but a lot of the software is cheaper or free. And this is, they've really played, like I say, that bit, they've played really well. And obviously, it's making Ultra HD Blu-rays look really expensive now.
Yeah, of course. But they always have been expensive, haven't they? But saying that, I just bought another two this week, Steve, so you'll be really proud of me.
Well, save it for later.
I'll save it for later, but it was two for £30, which I could not ignore that one. Right, anyway, yeah, so that's the Amazon HDR Fire TV and obviously the Apple TV 4K. It's becoming a big area of the market now, streaming. And we've said it a few times recently, and I'm going to say it again because I sat and watched another program that we're going to come on and talk about second half of the podcast, but I couldn't get over the quality of the streams. I mean, obviously, I've got really fast internet. I think I'm 70 down and 20 up, Infinity 2 that I have at home. So I've got really good internet. But I've still got to say the picture quality, apart from the odd compression artifact here and there, and you know, the odd issue with the odd stutter or whatever. But in terms of picture quality, you can now get away, Steve, with sitting and watching stuff on a projector.
Oh, yeah, I watched the whole of The Expanse Season 2 on the projector. Looks awesome. And the TV show we're going to talk about later, again, I watched it on the projector. Yeah. I watched it on three different TVs in the end.
I did as well, but I had to. The annoying thing is, each new episode, it flagged up as HDR and it knocked the projector into a mode that I really didn't want it knocking its head. And you know what the JVC is like? Waiting on a HDMI handshake on a JVC projector is like waiting
on. You go make a cup of tea.
It's like waiting on the second coming of Christ, isn't it, really? It takes so long. So when it knocks it into HDR mode, now you've got to go into the menu and knock HDR off again. Well, it puts it into D gamma, and I don't want it in D gamma. I've set up custom one to work properly. Oh, what an annoyance that is.
This is what Apple are saying. It can be annoying, you know, obviously not everyone's in that situation having a JVC projector, but different TVs and can take a little bit of a while to change refresh rates and output and HDR and SDR.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I can see where auto-switching would work, and I can see some logic in where Apple were maybe thinking, but if it's going to auto-switch, it has to switch with the content, as Steve said right at the beginning in his review. So if it's SDR, it has to switch back to Rec 709. Has to do that. It can't stay 2020 with wide color gamut and all the rest of it, and you know, the EOTF gamma curve, because everything's just going to look completely cooked and overcooked. And yeah. But yeah, waiting on a JVC projector handshaking takes a while. Really,
that is
does.
A first world problem now, isn't it?
It is a little bit. Right, so let's stick with these boxes because, you know, things really are changing in the landscape. And as Steve's already alluded to, it makes things like 4K Blu-rays look extremely expensive. And I can't wait for the price drop to happen, to be honest. But there's more than just the big names out there like Amazon Fire TV and Apple TV and so on. There's other names that maybe members of the forums are not that familiar with, such as Minix. And I believe Minix are a huge company when it comes to these boxes. Mark, so tell us all about it.
Well, after that build-up, this particular thing that I'm reviewing is a successor, which this is the Minix Neo Z834 Pro. The previous one didn't have the Pro suffix. The previous one was the best-selling mini PC on Amazon.com last year. So that they sell like hotcakes, these things. It's a Windows 10 mini PC, so it's not the usual. It's not really falling into that streamer category. The more I reviewed it, the more that became apparent. The Pro license, obviously, is more of an interest to businesses. And for the features it unlocks, it's not really, most home users aren't going to need that kind of thing. But it does double up as a video streamer. It's got good capabilities. Unfortunately, what happened as part of the upgrade, as well as the Windows 10 Pro license, is the slightly updated the CPU, and that has kind of broken some of the attractive things about the predecessor as a media streamer, which notably was it would do frameback 3D playback within Kodi, which very few devices do. And it's for the 3D fans and Kodi fans out there, of which there are lots, believe me, it was a really big feature, but it's just broken that. So as a streamer, it's not as good as a predecessor. As a everyday PC, I've had it plugged into my monitor for 2.5-3 weeks or so, and just used it as my everyday, because all my storage is on NAS anyway, and it comes with an office license, so it was perfectly usable for me. And it's been great. It's got excellent networking speed. It's got gigabit Ethernet, and it goes to the max. There's no bottlenecks there. It's got good read-write speeds from its internal storage. It writes to USB 3 very fast. It's a great little PC. And if you're just using Office, web browsing, emails, streaming from Xbox One, maybe, it's perfectly good. But as a media streamer, it's not especially exciting.
Okay, so I give you all that build up and you've just shut it all down.
Yeah, it's a great little device, but it's not one I would recommend for a media streamer.
Right, so if people, you know, if people are looking at the likes of Amazon and so on, and they're seeing these boxes turn up, and let's be fair, a lot of them are Chinese made boxes, are there any of them out with the big names that you would recommend that do just as good a job as say the Apple TV or the Fire TV?
I would say Minix are the leading Chinese manufacturer in terms of reliability for me. You've got the likes of WeTek, who are also very good, but they're based in Europe. Of course, everything gets made in China, but they're actually based in Europe, in Portugal. Other than that, who else have we done? There's Zapiti are good. Yeah, they're good. They make reliable. They work hard on their firmware. What you've got to look at is how well supported these devices are after release. So you need to do a bit of research and see if their previous devices received, you know, plenty of updates. Like the likes of the Minix, they'll do 10, 11 upgrades within a couple of, and support it for 2 years on every device. So you can't really argue with that. Egreat, they're an re-emerging name who seem to be, they're doing monthly updates for their devices. And of course, the last thing I reviewed, which was the Vero 4K from OSMC, they do monthly updates as well. So, and they promised that for 5 years. So it's all about after-sales support, really, after release support.
So if Minix do good updates, is there a likelihood that this version will end up as good for, you know, Kodi streaming, that kind of thing?
This one probably not. I mean, it's up to the developer of the software to bother making this slightly different CPU work with it, and I don't think he's got any interest to do it. So it's a Windows machine, they can't do as much with it. They can update the BIOS, but they can't actually release a firmware. It's a Windows 10 machine, so they are more limited on Windows machine than they are on Android what they can actually do with it.
Just seems a kind of funny thing to add to their product range, given the fact that, to me, kind of Minix is synonymous with kind of Kodi boxes. So, you know, to have something in the product range that then is less usable than something beforehand.
You know, it's only less usable for us. This is aimed at small businesses, home workers. Really.
Oh, right.
So no, yeah, I mean, like I said, this was the best-selling device of its type on Amazon last year. So there's obviously there's a market there. It just happened to be that the last one was an excellent little media player. by happenstance almost.
Okay, so just rounding up on these boxes then, from many PCs right the way through to the Fire TVs and Apple TVs and so on. Mark, where are we in terms of legalities when it comes to sideloading applications like Kodi and SPMC and that kind of thing, and using IPTV services and that kind of thing? Where are we?
It's hard. There's no problem in sideload. You can put any apps you want on it, of course. What you do with them is generally your business. IPTV services are very much a grey area. Of course, you might be breaking your T's and C's of your agreement with the likes of Sky or Virgin. But in terms of breaking the law, you're accessing links on the internet, and they're not going to come after the end user. They want to shut down the source. So, you know, I'm pretty sure or almost certain you're not breaking any laws by streaming from an internet link. But if on the other hand, the people that are doing the streaming, of course, are. So they're not, as I say, they're not going to come after the end user. They're going to go after the people that are selling the enabled boxes and the people that are providing the streams.
So, I mean, where are we in terms of fighting these problems then? Because there was quite a bit of news, I think it was the end of last year, where there was a guy for Hartlepool jailed and there was a few other people jailed. What was it that they were doing that was specific? Because Kodi got a really bad name on the back of that.
Yeah, well, Kodi's open source and excellent. That's the problem with it. It's because it's so easy to work with that it's easy to develop apps. So add-ons is what they're called in Kodi that will enable pirate sources. So, I mean, a lot of the movie and TV ones, they're just basically scraping and searching file sharing websites so that you can access, you know, through a web browser, and then providing metadata and thumbnails and what have you, and then actually playing the content from these links. IPTV is a bit different. He advertises the fact that you could get access to 3 PM kickoffs, you know, all the latest releases, things that are out in the cinema, and selling these devices enabled is now definitely against the law. Kodi's a bare bones bit of software. There's nothing. Kodi has nothing on it, but bar a few bits and pieces that actually just make it work. There's no add-ons pre-installed, and the add-ons that are available through the official repository shouldn't have any pirate sources in them. They're all third party developed.
I mean, when I think of pirate sources, though, I'm thinking of the old days of VHS and Betamax, and it's like a 17th generation copy, so you can hardly see anything. But what we're talking about here with IPTV services and streams and all that kind of thing is HD quality pictures, and I'm guessing that the quality is pretty high on these things.
On IPTV sources, there can be. I think they're generally, you know, they max out at 1080p, probably about 4 Mbps or something like that. So it's okay quality. It's probably better quality than you get through the likes of Sky Go, ironically.
Yeah, that's true.
So I mean, this is where the battle gets real, because if the quality is as good as that, and you know these services are only charging a nominal fee for access to their links, there has to be a clampdown at some point on this.
There already is. I mean, they're already blocking 3 PM. Well, 3 PM kickoffs. Premier League. Well, Premier Leagues are on. A lot of these services are being blocked, so they know where they are. They know where the servers they are coming from. But it's the legalities of it, because these IPTV services will have like a relay of servers, and it'll start in one country and go around all these different countries, and then you're going to have to involve all the legal bodies from all these countries in the first place, and they're probably going to host in countries that don't really care about these laws. So it's a nightmare for the service providers trying to take it down. We do know they are blocking many services when the 3 PMs, the 3 Premier League is on.
You see the ones, the big ones from Sky get shut down quickly. The ones from the UK-based broadcasters get shut down quickly. And they will take clips off. I think they've been banning Twitter accounts if they show clips and things like that, because it's, you know, copyrighted material. However, the problem is when it gets to, you know, something that's coming from, you know, an Arabic stream or something like that, it's a lot harder to get that one shut down.
Yeah.
Not that I've used these things.
No, I've heard.
You know quite a lot about it, Mark.
I tell you what, once you've watched a great Champions League game with like Mexican commentary, you can't go back.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, we're talking about the prices of content and all the rest of it, like the 4K Blu-rays and so on. you can see the temptations there for people. And we know that there's thousands, hundreds of thousands of people using these services every week. It's a real problem. But that then points back to things, well, why are people doing that? Because these services still charge a fee from what I understand, Mark.
Yeah, I think you can get hooked up with a sports service for about £1 a week or something like that.
But that then just points to the fact that content elsewhere is obviously overpriced because people don't want to pay that. Or is it a case of people are just greedy and they want stuff for
well, if you can get, I mean, a lot of, that's going to appeal to a lot of people, isn't it? If you can get at stuff even that Sky and BT don't show, even as a supplement to your Sky and BT subscription, if you want to watch your 3PMs, it should be telling the Premier League and it should be telling Sky something that they need to change the way they're delivering content, make it more affordable to people, make it more universal, and look, you know, to make the revenues in different ways. I mean, Facebook are talking about it, aren't they? They want to access to Premier League, maybe just goals and highlights as they happen and stuff like that. But they've got to do something about the way they're delivering it. They've got to make everything available and they've got to make it cheaper.
Yeah,
but it's come to
follow the Netflix model. Make it cheap enough, and more people will subscribe.
But it's interesting how kind of people view this now. It's in the kind of internet age, people accessing content view it more as, you know, they're viewing content from the world, so they shouldn't be restricted to one particular market. You know, so exactly, to say that you can only access content from this country, they're saying, well, you know, it's kind of, you know, I can look at a website from across the world. Why can't I access the content that would be streamed to someone, you know, kind of 1,000 miles away or something?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Steve Jobs had the right idea when he set up iTunes. You know, everything was 99 cents or 99 pence. You know, any music tracks and that kind of thing. It made it affordable. And people stopped using services like Napster and so on. Well, Napster was closed down eventually, but people moved across to that and they started to accept that that model was there. So I agree with what you're saying there, Mark. You know, if Sky, BT Sport and the rest of them, you know, want this to continue without it, because it's getting silly now. It's getting billions of pounds of revenue every year to get the rights to these things and all the rest of it. And other TV services start to suffer because they want to have the Premier League and all the rest of it. But like you say, if you made it more affordable and available in more platforms, and you get more people on board with that, you're eventually making more money anyway. Even if you're knocking it out, it's, I don't know, say £4 a game or whatever, you're making more money
exactly,
anyway.
Yeah. So exactly. Sky aren't going to give it up easily, are they? That is their crown jewel, the Premier League.
No, they're not going to give it up that easy. But then you can see why services like these IPTV services and all the rest that exist, and you can see why hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people, you know, are paying for that content.
Yeah, and they'll close one down, another one will open up, and another one will open up, and yeah, they're playing whack-a-mole. I mean, I've heard that some that some IPTV services have now learned how the blocks are working, and so they're just encrypting their streams before sending it to the servers, and they're all working again. So yeah, all that effort's probably going to come to nothing for the Premier League anyway.
So I was going to say, how easy is it to actually set up one of these Kodi boxes? I mean, for the average punter, is it something that requires a bit of skill and knowledge, or is it as easy as
set things up within Kodi? It's a little bit of a learning curve. Once you've done one, it's not difficult. But most of these services offer apps, you know, and you can just access it through your Apple TV or your Fire TV directly through an app. So right. Yeah. Not difficult, and they do automatic frequency switching.
And obviously, you know, we're bringing this up for conversation. We are not condoning it in the slightest bit as AV Forums. You know, we're all about the quality. We're all about getting the best possible quality at home and all the rest of it, and doing things legally. So I don't want people to take this the wrong way, but it's a subject that needs to be covered. It needs to be discussed, because the prices of some services at the minute are pushing people away. And it's like when you add tax to tobacco and that kind of thing, you get the smuggling turning up and all the rest of it. And it's just the same, you know, market economies and so on, just at work here. But there are ways to solve it. And, you know, if Sky was to look at their queue service and reduce the pricing to a reasonable level, I'd be straight back in there on Sky. I'm not at the minute because it's ridiculously expensive. And I think lots of people would think that way as well. You know, if these services, you know, they bit the bullet, made them a bit cheaper, but they would soon get so many subscribers that they would still be making huge revenues every year.
I think so. I think so. And I think there's normally to be made out of global rights than they already make. So, yeah, I don't think they'll lose anything in the end. They just need a serious look and a root and branch change of how they deliver it.
Yeah, at least we've gone away from the campaigns where everything that was slightly pirated was funding huge terrorist organisations and drug dealers and all the rest of it. That argument just never worked, did it?
Am I the only one who, when he hears pirates, thinking of a bloke in a big hat and doubloons and a parrot on his shoulder?
Yeah,
and
just you. Just you, Steve. We keep your fantasies to yourself. Right, Mark, game of the month before we wrap up on hardware.
Unfortunately, I've been playing old games. I haven't played anything new this month beyond the Call of Duty World War II beta because, like Steve, I just picked up a PlayStation 4 Pro, so I've been checking out lots of kind of older games that I already own just to see what they're like in 4K and HDR. I could make up the name of a game if you want, you know.
Well, actually, Mark,
with his vinyl.
What older games really benefit from a 4K and HDR upgrade then?
The one that really kind of wows me very much is it was one of the first kind of proper decent exclusives for the PlayStation 4, which was Resogun, which it absolutely shines with HDR. That's the thing. It's just got those kind of, you know, got the highlights that just kind of ping out from the TV, you know, against a kind of very dark backdrop. You know, it's really strong contrast, so on the OLED it looks absolutely stunning. That's the one that would be my pick of the bunch right now.
It is amazing how good some of these 4K HDR games look. I mean, even though I've been going on about PSVR a lot, it's just absolutely stunning picture quality that they can deliver now, bordering on photorealistic at times.
I mean it's very much the thing that surprised me is that HDR seems to me that the bigger selling point than 4K with these games. It's, you know, 4K is nice, but you're just looking at the bump in resolution, whereas as soon as you go back to a game that's, you know, standard dynamic range, you notice it. There's something kind of strangely flat about it. You know, you need that. And I've got to say also, just on the B7, the two ISF modes for picture modes are a real godsend for me to switch from between daylight viewing and then kind of, you know, nighttime dark room viewing.
Excellent. Can I see you're using it correctly?
Other than that, September, I mean, if you have bought any games, it's been a big month. You're starting to kind of roll up towards the holiday season, so we've had Destiny 2 out. You're gonna have that annual kind of football battle between Pro Evo and FIFA. One to watch there is the Switch version as well, of FIFA 18, which custom built for it, could be cut down in a few ways. However, hints at EA support for the Switch if it takes off, and I think it's likely to be quite a big seller because, you know, quality portable football games are very rare these days. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the ability to play, you know, I haven't played a FIFA in a few years now. However, I will be in for the Switch version because it's number one, largely won't be playing against other people, and you just want a decent football game that you can take with you on the go, play anywhere. Other than that, nice to see a little kind of text adventure, murder mystery, Danganronpa V3 coming to the PlayStation 4 as well as the Vita. And if you own an Xbox One, you should at least check out Cuphead, which is a downloadable title. It's had a few delays, finally out. Done in the style of a 30s cartoon. The animation is absolutely stunning. If you haven't seen it, you know, go and look at a trailer for Cuphead, and I guarantee you will be wowed by it.
Okay, so that wraps up hardware news and game of the month. And movie news is next. Right, so movie news. Obviously, my Limitless card has paid for itself this month, but I have not been to the cinema this week, Steve. Normally, there's a film out sort of the Wednesday or the Thursday, and nothing really took my fancy because there was nothing majorly interesting out at the cinema this week. You?
No, me neither. I don't fancy Flatliners or anything else that was coming out this week, so I have not been. But so, I've used my card four times this month, so I feel like I'm
same. Yep, same here. done that as well. Right, so, and I managed to catch at least one that I wanted to see out of that lot that was released in 1 week. Everything else stopped or runs quite quickly, which was a bit sad. So I have booked for next Thursday, 5th October, Blade Runner 2049, and I've just recently watched the UHD Blu-ray. What a stunning transfer. Looks absolutely brilliant. Atmos soundtrack was great. So it's really got me in the mood for this one now.
I'm really looking. I mean, I don't know much about the plot. I've seen some little, you know, behind the scenes featurettes and some trailers and stuff. People talking about it. Certainly it's going to look incredible, I think, based upon what I've seen. And what I know about the plot does sound interesting. So, and I like Denis Villeneuve as a filmmaker, so I have high hopes for Blade Runner 2049.
I have a theory on this one. Do you want to hear my theory? Because it might spoil it for everybody.
I'll take my earphones out.
Right, okay. Come back in 15 seconds, right? You ready? 3, mm-hmm. 2, 1. Everybody's a replicant.
Because pretty much everyone was in Blade Runner 2.
That's my theory.
So the human race has just gone.
There are no more humans. Everybody's a replicant. And it's been like that for decades, centuries. Yeah, that's what I think. That's what I think it is.
Well, we'll find out in 6 days. Well,
have you done yet?
No, because this goes out on Monday. Yeah, we're done now.
All right, well, we'll find out in 6 days based upon when we're recording this. And if we're coming out on Monday, it'll be 4 days. So.
Yeah, okay. Right, so that's Blade Runner. It's coming out. It looks like it's going to be great. It could be a bloody awful. Who knows? But it's got a lot to live up to because, you know, apart from... I think we said this last week, apart from the computer monitors and there's no mobile phones, it's a pretty timeless looking film, even though it was made in the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah, it hasn't really aged at all, other than the fact that obviously quite a few of the companies in the neon signs have gone bust. But it's a curse of Blade Runner, wasn't it? Yeah. All the companies that seem to go bust.
There used to be a big Atari sign in one of the cuts, but it wasn't in the one that I saw. So
I've noticed Atari signed in the trailers for 2049, so obviously it's an alternative universe.
It's an alternative,
go bust.
Yeah. Yeah. They could come back.
Pan Am didn't go bust.
Yeah, they're coming back.
Yeah.
Some sort of, is it like a steam machine, Mark?
It just looks like a little emulation box that they're selling at massive price premium.
It's fantastically expensive, isn't it?
Yeah, ridiculously so. But it does look like it kind of emulates the little wooden front of the Atari 2600. So I might order two.
I'll have the other one at cost. Right. Okay, so let's move on. That's coming out in the cinema this week. Unfortunately, the podcast is not around for the next 2 weeks, so it's going to be 2 weeks' time before you get our opinions on the film. But if you listen to my theory there and I'm right, get in. Right.
Want to choose a film of the month?
Oh, I suppose we could, couldn't we? The only thing is, I don't think there was any real standout movies of the month. I mean, everything I went to see was great and enjoyable, but... I wouldn't have had them down as you must go and see it. I mean, Kingsman, it was all right. It was bloody stupid. But if you enjoyed the first one, you'll probably like the second one. It obviously just welcome a little bit. What else did I see?
Like It?
Yeah, no, I would definitely recommend it. I thought that was great. So.
Okay,
did you catch the TV version was on last night?
Oh, was it? On what channel?
I don't know, something low on the freeview spectrum.
Was it late at night, Mark?
It was actually, to be honest. It was part one. Part two is going to be in a week's time.
Right, there you go. I didn't see it, so is that your choice, is it, Steve?
Yeah, that'd be my choice of the film month. I did actually think it was really good.
Right. I saw Logan Lucky, which I thought was quite amusing, but I wouldn't have it as film in the month. And American Assassin as well, which was derivative second half. Started off well. So for me, if I was going to pick one of them, probably American Assassin.
Film of the month has to be something, you know. The best of the bad bunch.
Well,
you got to pick something.
I have. I just said American Assassin because it was on. Yeah, and Steve's gone with it. So, but I've got to say, American Assassin's not great, but it's the best of what came out during the month. Hopefully, Blade Runner's going to be great, and that'll be because I don't think there's anything else.
October's got Thor Ragnarok. I can't wait for that.
Well, it looks utter pish.
And the Snowman looks interesting too with Michael Fassbender.
What?
Hunting a serial killer.
Oh.
Snowman.
Right.
Not the one with the dolphin.
Not an Howard Jones update.
I was going to say, that that's better for Michael Fassbender.
There was one I wanted to catch, but it seems to be that it's only being screened at, in certain screens on certain evenings now. But it's been getting some really great reviews, and it's like a murder mystery called Wind River.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's been getting some great reviews, but it's like 10:20 at night. And it's the only showing of the day, yeah, you know what I mean?
Never stay awake at that time.
No, no. But basically, I think it's something about two agents examining a murder in a Native American reservation. So, and it's been getting some really, really good reviews. I'll just have to catch that on the streaming service then.
Yes, or maybe disc.
No,
we segue nicely
no,
into
no,
the next
probably a streaming service, but Blu-rays are still around if you want to buy them.
Blu-rays out this week, we've got Pirates of the Caribbean, Salazar's Revenge, or Dead Men Tell No Tales, depending which country you're in.
Pass.
Yeah, well, not even getting Ultra HD Blu-ray release in this country, which is a poor show on part of Disney, I think.
Man, no, it's just the
no, no one's interested.
Yeah, they're only going to sell it on DVD, really.
I was glad to see that it didn't do very well. I mean, it did okay business, like 700 million worldwide, but it did a lot less than the previous two, so people are clearly getting sick of doing Depp's antics.
There's only so much you can do based on a theme park ride, isn't it, really?
They've built it for long enough.
Yeah.
So that hasn't done that well. And the same also applies to Transformers, which hasn't done that well this time around, which is good news again, because people are obviously starting to rise up.
How well did it do in China, though?
Very well. Although, staggeringly, I think I've mentioned this before, but if you look at the top 10 films internationally this year, number one is Beauty and the Beast. Number four is Wolf Warrior 2. Never heard of it. Made $875 million. It's made more than Guardians of the Galaxy, and it's made all that money in one country, China. That is a staggering amount of money from a single 3D. Film in a single. Probably. so yes, Pirates of the Caribbean, Salazar's Revenge, that's out on Blu-ray this week. I like Phil, I have no real interest in it. I've zoned out, I think, on the second film, to be honest. Also out this week, and this is worth getting if you're a fan of Star Wars, because I've watched it and thoroughly enjoyed it. It's Star Wars Rebels Season 3. This is a great series, it's going to be the fourth season is going to be the last season, so it's going to be a finite ending period, which is good. And third season was excellent. Some really good stuff in it. I won't say anything more because I don't want to spoil it, but definitely worth checking out. It's the sort of thing they should be doing in the standalone films, but aren't. New characters operating within the same universe, and it's well written. It's exciting and fun, and it ties in nicely with the rest of the universe, and I love it. So check that out.
Okay, and UHD Blu-rays of the month.
You haven't done Blu-rays of the month yet.
Well, we don't buy them, Steve, so why
would we? I've got one I did buy. I don't buy many, but I did buy The Handmaiden, Korean film based on an English book called The Fingersmith, which is set in Victorian England, but this film was set in Japanese-occupied Korea. It's brilliant. I get the extended edition. It comes in two versions, the theatrical cut, extended cut, but extended cut comes with both versions anyway. Absolutely brilliant. Really, really great plot. Loads of twists and turns in it, and not this should influence you in any way whatsoever, but some absolutely stonky lesbo sex scenes. Anyway, The Handmaiden, really great film. And it looks gorgeous too, beautifully shot, and absolutely stunning, stunning movie. So my recommendation of the month.
Okay. Can we get on to UHD Blu-rays now?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm really struggling to pick my best one of the month, which is unusual for me because normally I don't buy them. But like I said, Blade Runner looks absolutely stunning. But then I watched Close Encounters at the weekend, 40th anniversary edition. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't seen it in about a decade. So revisiting it, I'd forgotten just how powerful a film and how influential a film it actually was. And there's lots of little bits that you kind of forget about, don't you?
I would be my pick, actually. Much as I think that Blade Runner looks and sounds fantastic, what I love about the Close Encounters disc is that Sony have remastered and done all three versions in 4K and HDR.
Yeah.
And they include all, actually, I should say the US disc includes all the special features. The UK disc, I don't think, does. I think it's just the film. But the special features include a new, really good new 20-minute interview with Spielberg, J.J. Abrams, and Denis Villeneuve talking about the film, which I thought was quite good.
Yeah, it's one of the better extras I've seen recently, to be honest. It kind of harks back to the golden days of DVD and Blu-ray special edition documentaries. So, yeah, it was just a shame it was only 20 minutes long.
But it was interesting because I totally agreed, being of the similar age to Villeneuve and Abrams, I think we're all about the same age. So we saw Close Encounters at about the same age, 10, 11. at the cinema, and it did have a profound effect on me as a film. But also, and I think Denis Villeneuve says this, he sort of said, I saw the film, I thought, who's that French guy playing Claude Lacombe? I'd never heard of François Truffaut, no idea who it was. But obviously later on, I discovered, you know, he was a director as well, and he'd been part of the French New Wave. So, you know, not only did Close Encounters, you know, show me what films could look like in terms of spectacle and effects, along with Star Wars, but it also introduced me to all other aspects of cinema as well. So it was a really influential film, and I just love its sense of wonder that's so missing these days. I just think it's an amazing piece of work by Spielberg. Up there with Jaws is his best film, in my opinion.
Okay, so that's our UHD Blu-ray of the month for this month. So let's move on to stuff coming out this week, and I'm expecting a delivery on Monday. A film which, again, was one of these groundbreaking films I saw as a child and have fallen in love with, and I've probably had this on every format it's been available on as well.
E.T. the Extraterrestrial.
Yep.
Yeah, we got actually some quite good titles coming out this week. Bizarrely, two of them are even coming out before they come out in the US, which makes a nice change. So we've got E.T. the Extraterrestrial, that's out this week. And it's nice to see two big Spielberg titles hitting a new format so early, because certainly my experience of DVD and Blu-ray was that Spielberg titles took a long time to come out on those formats. So that's good news. E.T. like Close Encounters has had a full 4K restoration and looks stunning, and also has a DTX soundtrack, which is nice because Close Encounters still only had the original 5.1 track. Also this week, Serenity, which is a favourite of mine, so I'm quite looking forward to that. I think it's a great movie. Shame it didn't do better because we didn't get any more films from Joss Whedon in that area, but it's still a great movie. And also Apollo 13, another favourite of mine, easily Ron Howard's best work. And yeah, both of those have had, certainly I know Apollo 13's had a 4K restoration, so that should also look spectacular on Ultra HD 4K Blu-ray.
Yep, and I'm waiting for the comments on the grain already on that one. Right. So,
if you want to see comments on grain, and I have seen the disc, Starship Troopers.
Right, okay. Right, let's move on, because there's a new Star Trek series. We mentioned it last week, and we're not going to go into it in too much detail, because to discuss it would be to ruin it, because there is a reveal at the close of episode 2, which I really don't want to spoil for people, because once I got to that point, I thought, oh, right, okay, even more interesting. What I will say is, Star Trek Discovery, it looks at this moment in time like it's setting itself up to be a story arc approach, so not by the episode approach, but I've got to say, the delay in it arriving was probably worth it, because apart from the odd effect here and there that looked like a painting, I thought the effects were excellent. I thought the acting was superb. I thought the cinematography looked really, really good. It's in HDR as well, so it had really nice
look. Yeah, 1080p to it. HDR, which is quite unusual, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I went looking around because I saw that, and I saw the HDR logo, but no 4K, and I'm thinking, well, hang on, this has to be in 4K. But no, it's 1080p HDR. So so there's two episodes up there at the moment. If you haven't seen them, go watch them. They are really quite surprisingly good. I wasn't expecting much. Maybe the low expectation helps. But certainly a reveal at the end of the second episode kind of sets everything up, and you're not expecting it, and I'm not going to ruin it for people.
I think opinion, I know, because I've read a few reviews, is going to be massively divided depending on whether or not you're a real Star Trek fan. If you're a massive Star Trek fan, you're going to hate it because it's got nothing to do with Star Trek. But I quite enjoyed it because I couldn't give a monkey's about Star Trek, really. The whole thing about it being, you know, set 10 years before prime timeline Kirk episodes is cobblers. All the Trekkies will tell you that, you know, 10 years before, that's the Enterprise was still going around at that point. The one that you see in Star Trek, Star Trek, the rebooted film, it seems like this is just a complete reboot again of the series, you know, with no real continuity whatsoever. Not sure I don't have an issue with. I mean, and obviously it's a lot more action-packed, I'd say, than you'd expect from a Star Trek series.
The first two episodes have been, absolutely. And there's a tone, again, I'm not going to spoil it, because there are issues and stuff that are raised within the first couple of episodes, which kind of set it up as to why is it happening this way. Because, like you say, it's not a Trek. It doesn't feel like a Star Trek movie or TV series. There's a definite theme there. But I think that's going to get resolved as we go into episode 3 and 4 and so on.
Yeah, it's definitely got a different vibe to what you could call classic Star Trek episodes. And also, Roddenberry was very much in the whole theory that there shouldn't be any conflict between the crew and, you know, everything's lovey-dovey in the future, which certainly isn't the case in this one.
Yeah, no, it's set up great. It looks great. Have you seen it, Mr. Burright?
No, I'm afraid I haven't.
Okay. Hodge?
Not yet. I might do know that it's all right. I'm not massively keen, as you can tell.
You're like our TV food testers.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's Star Trek, so I was going to watch the first couple ones. It's got me hooked in. I'm going to give it a chance. It's better than I thought it was going to be. It's not classic Star Trek. And I think it works in that respect. I think it looks gorgeous. The technology, that it does hark back a little bit. So the phasers look the same as or they have that look of the classic Star Trek, as well as the communicators and so on. So there's little things that hark back, and some of the sound effects in there as well with the bridge and so on. You can tell it's a Star Trek. Yeah, the transporters as well, and so on. So there are cues in there, and you know, it is the Star Trek universe. It's just taking it from a very, very different angle.
Who have they got in the engine room, though?
Well, see, this is the thing. In the first two episodes, there's only sort of three main characters on the ship. I'm not going to name the ship as well, because that'll spoil it. So there's only three main characters on the ship that you really follow, as well as an admiral. And that's about it. The story kind of plays around them, and there's some bad guys. I'm not going to tell you who the bad guys are either. It's a different take on it. It's got my interest, and I'll be watching the next few episodes. And I've got to say, it looked fantastic on the projector set up.
Yeah, it did.
It looked really, really nice. Really nice.
It is a bit unusual in the sense it seems to focus on a single character most of the time, which is not Star Trek like. Usually there's a group of characters, isn't there, like Kirk and Spock, yep, and McCoy, yep, etc. Yep. This is very much. And also, why is a girl called Michael? Am I missing something there?
it's probably an American thing, because they can't say Graham either, do they? So maybe it's supposed to be Michelle, and they can't say it, Michael.
Michael Burnham. I was like, who's this Michael Burnham, Blake? Oh, it's her. What?
Yeah.
I can't think he was Mika. I was thinking, is her name Mika? Is it? Why do people call him Michael? Yeah, or maybe it's meant to be Michelle, but the Americans can't say Michelle for some reason. But
they really can't say Graham.
No, Graham. Graham.
Anyway.
Or Colin.
Yeah. Right, so that's Star Trek Discovery. To say any more would spoil it at this point. So I think we need to wait till probably season finale before we come back and revisit this one. And a lot of people will be happy at that because they don't really like Star Trek. But we'll come back and visit at the end of this season. In terms of other TV, I mean, we're coming into October now. The big one is obviously Stranger Things 2 is gonna land on the 27th, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
So Halloween weekend. Hopefully all the episodes are going to drop at the same time, and it's not going to be a weekly thing. And hopefully that's going to be great. But it's normally traditionally TV season. So Mark, Hodge, and Steve, you two seem to spend lots of time watching TV. So is there anything that we really need to be paying attention to?
I've watched surprisingly little. I'm just going through Narcos season 2 because I got reminded season 3 was available, and that's not bad. It's not particularly good. I'm actually having issues with Netflix on Virgin, and it's fluctuating quality quite a lot. So it'll go from 4K down to SD and back again.
Oh,
and
this has been a running thread on the forums, actually, isn't it? The problem.
Which is why I picked it up on it, really. It's been really bugging me.
It's funny you say that, because last night it didn't drop in quality or anything like that, but it stopped and buffered halfway through one of the episodes. My Netflix never does that.
No, I've never had problems until this last couple of weeks. So
welcome
to
my world.
Yeah, I've just switched. I've got a VPN on the Shield, so I just switched that on, and it all was well. So it points it to being Virgin that was the problem.
Right. So, well, I'm BT, so that doesn't explain it. But yeah, it buffered last night, and it's the first time it's ever done that.
I must say, I put a VPN to America, so I was going to American Netflix, and that was just spotless. It went straight into 4K and then just stayed there and didn't move. So yeah, maybe it's just UK Netflix servers or something. They're just getting hammered and they need a little bit of work. But yeah, I've been having that kind of problem, which has put me off Netflix a bit.
Okay, cool.
I started watching Narcos season 1, actually. I think it's really good.
It's good music, isn't it?
It's a great show. I'm really enjoying that.
So yeah. Season 2 is good. Yeah, it's good, but I say I was just getting a bit bugged with that issue last night. So, yeah.
But the show I recommend, I watched this month, really quickly binged it mostly because I enjoyed it so much, is the second season of The Expanse. So I know I talked about the first season. This is it's set in a it's a sci-fi adventure set in the future with where they colonized Mars and the asteroid belt and also some of the moons of Saturn, that sort of stuff. But it's really good, full of politics and intrigue, great effects, really top drawer effects. I watched it on the big screen in the home cinema, and it stood up nicely to that. It's got a really complex plot, and it treats science accurately and realistically in terms of how you would travel through space and you know, things like gravity and that sort of stuff. It's done really well. So I think it's a fantastic show. If you haven't seen it, I'd recommend it highly.
So that's our TV picks for this month. I'm sure as we get towards the festive season, things are going to pick up yet again with more seasons and series and all the rest of it. And if you want to know or you want some suggestions of what you could be watching, what you could be catching up on and so on, we do have our guide. It's on the forums, it's in the editorial area, and Steve is going to update that later on today. So when you listen to the podcast, it should be back on the homepage for you to find and get your suggestions of what you could be binge watching as the Dark Knights come in. And that's not a reference to a Batman film. Right. James Cameron's been busy, has he? I haven't heard of James Cameron for years. But obviously, he's now started production on his Avatar sequels. I have no interest whatsoever in these. The combined budget of $1 billion. Jesus. Interesting point. He's writing and producing Terminator 6. It's going to be directed by Tim Miller. And it's going to star Linda Hamilton and Sarah Connor. Now, I've got some real problems with this. Because if we take the movies that exist at the minute, Steve... she's dead.
Yeah, he's ignoring all that. He's basically writing a sequel to Terminator 2. That's what he's doing.
Right, so Terminator 3 would make absolutely no sense whatsoever now then. Not that it did anyway, yeah. But
forget, you know, he's basically saying, forget Terminator 3, Terminator Salvation, Terminator Genesis, forget all that. He said, I'm writing a sequel to Terminator 2. Sarah Connor is the heart and soul of those two films, therefore she has to be around. And Tim Miller, who directed Deadpool, I mean, it's a good choice for director. I think he's got a good action director in there. Cameron, I trust. So, you know, if he's writing and producing it, and he obviously conceived the whole thing in the first place and did the two films, which were by far and away the best films in the series, I've got hope that he can deliver something interesting and
okay,
worthwhile.
But don't you have a problem with it with somebody saying, well, forget about these films? Cause,
not really, because they were shit, as you just pointed out. So.
Yeah, I know, but in the same time, it's like, well, you kind of just forget. That's like saying forget the prequels. Now, as much as I hate the prequels, at the same time, they exist, so you have to say, well, yeah, they might be garbage, but they do exist, and it's part of that universe, and you kind of just forget about them.
See, I prefer that approach. I prefer the approach of just saying we draw a line under it, that was a mistake, rather than kind of tying it all together and saying, no, this is canon now, so we have to kind of continue with this labored, you know, we screwed up, yeah. we killed off this character too early, or we established that one. I would prefer, you know, kind of filmmakers just to say, you know, like you can watch kind of hokum like Alien versus Predator without kind of thinking, how does this necessarily affect how it goes into, Alien, that kind of thing. I like the fact that, you know, it's almost more of a kind of comic book approach, a kind of alt world. We're just doing a different version of something and just accepting that, you know, you can have a more of a kind of play about with it. And particularly when you're dealing with anything involving time travel, you can just go to the standard, oh, well, that branched off into a, you know, different timeline. That's technically now, you know, each time someone travels back in time, that branches off or something. You know, it didn't make total sense to begin with. So I'm fine with this.
Yeah. I mean, Terminator Genesis effectively did that. It tried to do that in a way. I was all for Neil Blomkamp doing a sequel to Aliens, which kept Newton Hicks alive, because that was the worst thing about, well, one of the many, many things that was bad about Alien 3 was the fact that they're going to kill two important characters and therefore, you know, basically negated the whole point of watching Aliens. So, yeah, I've got no problem with drawing a line under some of these films and just saying, look, they were shit. We made a mistake. Let's just start again. So I'd like to see what... 2019 it comes out. Let's see what Cameron can do. But I've got faith in the guy because he hasn't let me down yet.
Well, I want to see if Hodges has got an opinion on this. It'd be nice to hear his voice.
God, honestly, I couldn't give a shit about four Avatar sequels. I mean, really, come on.
Oh, I couldn't care at all about Avatar. I thought the original Avatar was overblown gobbledygook anyway.
Surely Terminator's had its day and kind of just move on.
Yeah, as soon as I hit my 40s, Mark, that's been my attitude. As soon as I hit my 40s, yeah. Now, it's like, oh, I'm too old for this shit.
Yeah.
Go on, move on.
I do have to question the logic of spending $1 billion on Avatar sequels. That just seems like, ooh, well, I don't know. Does anyone care anymore?
No,
it's 3D's dead now. Come on. That was the whole point of Avatar, wasn't it? It was the only good thing about it was the 3D. Terrible movie.
I suppose that's $250 million per a film, which is about the average for a big budget movie these days. But even so, that's a shitload of money.
I mean, what you need to do, right, is put that $1 billion into a sequel to True Lies.
Do you know what was weird, though? I was thinking, God, is that the most amount of money ever spent on a bunch of films? Because that is a lot of dough. And they spent $750 million on the Hobbit movies, although after tax breaks, it was $650 million. But somehow, and God knows how they managed to do this, Disney spent nearly $400 million making Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides. How the hell did they do that? How do you spend that kind of money on a single film? Staggering, isn't it?
Yeah, just a bit. Staggering. Avatar sequels, just no interest in that whatsoever. Like you say, Mark, I mean, the big thing with Avatar was the 3D. And that was his whole thing to make that was he wanted to create a new world that was going to be in three dimensions and all the rest of it. And he succeeded with that, and it was a really, really popular movie because of that. But I don't think there's any need to do sequels. I mean, you could do a sequel to Titanic, could you not? That'd make more sense.
I just wish he'd do something original. I mean, you know, he's done point, okay so far, isn't he? Or better still, pull his finger out and give us The Abyss on Ultra HD Blu-ray. That's the main thing.
Yeah, How old is he? James Cameron.
Late 60s.
What, have you got him in your Deadpool or something?
Well, no, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of work for a man in his 60s. Jesus. He's asking for a heart attack.
Well, 2 years ago, he did go to the bottom of the Mariana Trench on his own. So he's a bit of, you know, he's a real man's man, isn't he? This guy's a legend. Cameron's awesome. I love Cameron.
He was born on the 16th of August, 1954.
All right, so what's that?
63.
No, he's not that old then. Nah, he's got plenty of time in him yet.
That's a lot of work for a man in his 60s.
And on that bombshell, that's it for the podcast this week. My thanks to, who's on this one again? Oh yeah, Steve Withers.
I've seen things you people wouldn't believe.
Mark Hodgkinson.
That's the spirit.
It's the first time you sounded enthusiastic in the whole podcast.
It's always time to go.
It's because it's the end. And Mark Buttright.
Then we're stupid and we'll die.
Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook, bookmark AV Forums for the latest reviews, news and videos, and of course, why not leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes, but only if you enjoyed the show. I'm Phil Hinton, thanks very much for listening, and remember, we won't be back until the 23rd of October, so until then, take care, and we'll see you when we come back.